Ryan Harris played at Creighton Durham Hall, Notre Dame, and in the NFL. He lives in Denver now. He's a Super Bowl champion, won a ring out there. He has an incredibly fascinating, interesting background. He's Muslim, grew up in St. Paul, African-American as well. And so he's seen it all and observed it all. He's not just somebody that played football. He's someone that observes it from a social aspect as well. So I wanted him on tonight to talk about all of the topics that we were just talking about. Ryan, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, what's going on, brother? Great to be back on, Mike.
Yeah, you too. Before we get, did Teddy Bridgewater get a concussion the other day? What happened to him?
Well, he got smoked two games ago. Somehow they didn't call it a penalty, but he got back through protocol, played against the Steelers. Broncos lost on the last second interception, but Teddy Bridgewater has been a breath of fresh air out here in Denver, and he's shown people what good quarterbacking can look like, and it's been enjoy. Some wins, even though it's been a two-game losing streak.
Yeah, but you're, so far you're happy with what you've seen from him in the sample size, huh?
Love it. Love it. And I love, as a former player, you know, I love how he treats his fellow teammates. Justin Simmons had a big game. He's a safety for the Broncos. And he did an interview, but he always is big on getting into the prayer circle after the game. He turned around after the interview. No one was there except for Teddy Bridgewater. He was kneeling there waiting for him at the 50, and he said, I know this means a lot to you. You want to pray together. So he's far beyond a good quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater's doing the things that builds bonds for life and what sports are all about.
Yeah, one of the great stories of all time, I was out there the day the ambulance came to take him away, and I mean to tell you, I have not seen anything like that, the feeling, because there was so much uncertainty that day, not just about career ending, but about would he lose his leg from the knee down, and nobody knew because nobody had ever seen anything like this at Winter Park that day. And as the ambulance went in, it was so surreal. Those of us that were in the media were, and nobody, none of us knew at the time when the ambulance showed up what was going on because we hadn't been allowed into that portion of the practice yet. And they had seen this and witnessed it. And when you saw the coaches and the players and their reaction and the way they looked, it was mortifying to see what they had seen and not really understand it. But no one on that day thought that Teddy Bridgewater would play another snap, I don't think.
Yeah, and that's the miracle on top of the great play, right?
Yep.
I mean, and Teddy Bridgewater's never forgotten about that. And that kind of urgency and appreciation, I mean, that was something that I had after my, you know, fourth back surgery.
Yep.
and my toe surgery. I mean, I had five surgeries at one point. I was just so happy to get to the locker room and see my jersey for practice, you know?
So, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Are you okay today? Do you have any long lingering effects right now or not?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, in 10 years in the NFL, I had 9 surgeries, 4 on my back, a total toe replacement, and then I had to have 5 on my lower leg to save my leg after an infection, full skin graft. So just, you know, the injury rate's 100%, and but I'll tell you, I don't know about you, Mike Max, but I'm 36, black and retired. You show me another industry you can do that, and I'll try and join that one or get my kids in there.
I understand. So that's my next question: is do you regret any of it?
No, I do not. Both of my grandfathers served in the military, and I've been aware from a young age that a lot of people risk a lot more for a lot less. So I'm fortunate to have had great coaches who cared. You know, Rich Kalick, Ray Hitchcock,
yep.
You know, and the many others at Creighton Durham Hall, as well as all my coaches at Jimmy Lee Rec Center in St. Paul and at Notre Dame and beyond. So I've been fortunate and I've been able and I've respected it by earning all the success I possibly can given my talents and abilities.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it because that means you got peace of mind going through life. And when you look at your family, you say, and I did something for them too, and then there's something to that. Obviously, part of the reason I wanted you on today was the reaction to John Gruden's sudden abrupt resignation, and the reasons have become obvious now. As a former player and someone that competed against Gruden, if not directly, indirectly, certainly, how did this strike you?
Well, you know, first and foremost, a cardinal sin to players is if a coach becomes a distraction, you know, and we were seeing that in Jacksonville. It's practically against the rules of football. If they had more, you know, oil in the lamp to stay up, that would have been the next rule. Coaches cannot be a distraction. And,
yep. Just and like the coaches demand that you're not a distraction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, even because I think the assumption is everybody's disgusted by this situation. But we know better than that. There are some people who understand what John Gruden was saying. And from that standpoint, you just got to be consistent as a fan and say, hey, you know, he became a distraction for his team. That's what happens. That's what happens to all of us if we become a distraction at work, right? And John Gruden's no different. I also think he would have kept his job had he apologized for all of it. If he had stood up there, instead of just saying, yeah, I apologize to DeMarie Smith and about that, and, you know, if he'd have apologized for it all, if he'd have said, listen, I stand up here as a man who's embarrassed about things that I said in emails in my past. I've grown from that. I've learned from that. I made mistakes, and I apologize to everyone because I realize that words create action and words have impact. And I'm continuing to learn, and I'll continue to show up in our community for all the groups that I've offended through my words, because who I am as a man is very different, and I look forward to proving that with you, the community. I mean, I think he keeps his job because how many of us are like that, right? How many of us have grown in our views over the last 10 years, some of us in the last 10 months? So,
sure.
Yeah, I think that was a missed opportunity. And last but not least, if you're a black player on that team and any person of color, you're saying, how come it took more, right? How come it took more than what he said about DeMarie Smith? So there's a lot there. There are a lot of John Grudens in our world. And I believe that, you know, you can't blame someone for the environment they're raised in. And we have to create space for people to say, hey, I made mistakes. I've grown. And I want to keep showing up in new places that reinforce the beliefs I say I have.
Based on what you saw in his emails and what you've heard, would the African-American players be huddled amongst each other in the locker room saying, how can we play for this guy? Or is it more, hey, man, I just care that I get treated fairly? Where does that stand in general inside a locker room on something like this?
Well, you lose either way, John Gruden loses trust. And they played like it. They got their tails beat by the Chicago Bears. I mean, the score is closer than it looked. I watched that game. It was bad. They couldn't get anything going offensively, defensively. They were not the same team that got them to be 3-1. So you lose the trust, as everybody would, when you find out something dark about someone you supposedly know. And no doubt, you know, John Gruden telling players he loves them, as all teammates tell you, you know, hey, before game, I love you, I love you. Well, do you now? You know, do you love all of me? Or are you just saying that because I'm your teammate here? So, but every person of color, this is something that you wonder about people, and then when you take them for their word that they're not like that, it can be shocking, and it can stir you down deep, as it would anybody. You know, those in a faith community who learn something about a leader. You know, these things happen in life, and it shocks you to your core.
Does it bother you that he was anti-NFL at all, or, you know, critical of the commissioner, or is that fair game as part of it, or is there a code that extends to that as well?
Well, to me, that's where the team knew they had to release him, because it's one thing if you don't like me because of the color of my skin. It's a whole nother thing if you don't care about the safety of any of your players. I mean, the rule changes have been great for player health.
It has. You're talking about concussions now and some of that he commented on, right?
Well, yeah, the limiting of practice to one padded practice a week. I mean, Mike, we would have sometimes three padded practices a week, you know, where you're hitting for 2 hours before a game where you just, you know, are going to go hit some more. So they've made substantial changes that will create better husbands, better fathers, better community members 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And if you're against that, there's no place for you in football. No, not around the players, and especially not around the fans who have young kids who are looking at leaders in the NFL, whether it be players or coaches.
Before this happened, how did you view him? Did you view him as a really good cutting-edge coach? Did you view him as overrated? Did you view him as, you know, competitive in there but not any better or worse than most?
I think it's you know, I know what I've experienced from him. I was a player for him in the Senior Bowl. He was our head coach.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And, you know, so I wouldn't want to judge him in that scenario because he's evaluating players.
Right.
He's, you know, he's doing all kinds of things. But the inconsistencies of, you know, how he represented himself to his players and who he was when players weren't around, that's something that's been around him for his career. I'm talking just in the football sense. But, you know, a guy who won a Super Bowl, a guy who understands offense and a guy who knows how to motivate players. So, you know, I think everybody was shocked. And I think, as you know, I think if you were to ask John Gruden now, he'd be shocked at how he sees his words now, you know, and yep. and that doesn't matter, you know, how that came about or what was his past. This is his story now.
Yeah, because people forget this a little bit. You'll remember this, but Simeon Rice, I believe it was, when they let him go in Tampa, had some scathing words to say about him as the human being, didn't he?
He did. And people didn't really take it as gospel because...
No, they didn't at the
Sidney
time.
Rice, yeah, because Sidney Rice was kind of a different player at that time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're all going to look back and see things. I mean, you know, he even said he released Marquette King not because he was a football player, but because of his personality. So things like that, you know, reports you read now, hindsight's 20/20, and we have a clear-eye view. And many of us would not do well if somebody put a 20/20 clear-eye view on our communications in the last 15 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think all of us feel that a little bit. You know, what have I said? What have I done? What, you know, Ryan Harris is our guest from Creighton Durham Hall to Notre Dame and the NFL. And as you can ascertain by listening to this, a very well-spoken and thoughtful young man who I've known for many, many years now. What do players expect from their coaches? What is the top three things that you want to know about your head coach fundamentally?
That he's going to be on time, that he's going to be consistent, and he's going to be honest. So those are the things that you look for. I mean, that's what we all look for in leaders, right? Can you be consistent? I mean, can you show up? Can you be on time? I mean, you're setting the meetings, you're setting us up. Don't be late, and tell us, you know, show us how you want us to win, basically, right? That's what showing up is. At the Pittsburgh Steelers, they say first rule in getting better is showing up. And so how do you show up? But can you be consistent? Can you, if you want to rip a guy, can you also celebrate that guy? Sometimes in the same meeting, you know, can you be consistent with your celebration as much as your criticism? This is for all leaders, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the things you look for. You look for that honesty, and you look for that consistency, and you look for timeliness to learn how to win in the NFL and also win in life wherever you're doing business.
You know, I'm going to throw another one in there, and I want to get your opinion on this, because I see it with good high school coaches. And I never thought of it as a form of motivation, but I think it is. And it's the word organized. And what I mean by that is, especially in this day and age, when I see a coach that sends out the whole schedule for the whole year, the practice times, the days, parents know, kids know, when I see on a weekly basis them saying, this is what we're going to do this week, this is, you know, shells this day, shells, and you, in that you see this commitment through their organizational skills. And I know that you don't think organizational and motivation sometimes is the same thing. But when I see this with the great high school coaches, and they eliminate a lot of the cloudiness that you were just talking about and the fog, and they tell you exactly what's expected of you, you begin to think, hey, there's a standard here, and this person really cares about doing this right. Do you see that?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely organizational-wise. And you know what it does is it creates efficiency, right? We expect our leaders to be efficient. Give me my job, let me do it. Put me in a position to win, and let's go. And if I'm not competing at the right level, if I'm making mistakes, educate me, teach me, don't criticize, you know, my effort, right? I mean, so those are the things that come to mind when you talk about being organized as a leader. Can you have us moving quick? Do I know every Wednesday that I am here? I mean, all of us look for excuses. Many of us love a change schedule, right? Hey, we might be at 7 a.m., we might be at 10 a.m. Well, everybody's hoping for the 10 a.m., right?
Yep.
So no one's ready for the 7. So you just want consistency, and that comes in the way of being organized and being consistent and honest about the effort you need and that you have the player's best interest at heart.
Urban Meyer shows up. We alluded to it earlier with a phone video of a young lady grinding up against him. And you know, what I found interesting in listening to Tony Dungy speak the other day as well was two things. One was that he didn't fly back with the team after a game, and I thought that was strange. I didn't realize that many people said, I've never seen that before in my life, where the head coach doesn't go back with the team at the NFL. And then number two, what happened? Okay, so when something like that happens, what happens in a locker room?
Well, again, you have a coach becoming a distraction, so that's immediately unacceptable. I've never heard, in my 18 years playing football, never in my life had a coach stay back. That is the insult to the team that's unforgivable. And he had issues before with those veterans in that locker room. with the schedule that he tried to put together, you know, trying to treat them like college kids, keep them busy all day. I mean, these are grown men who want to pick up their kids from school too,
yep.
right? And they've been other places where you can get that done. So, you know, when it comes to Urban Meyer, you know, leaving your team after a loss and then having that video happen, it was detrimental on two fronts. And Urban's never been in a place like this.
No, he hasn't. And he hasn't been in the NFL. Welcome to the NFL, by the way, Urban, where they ain't real concerned about your college resume, right?
Well, he's got no control over the narrative.
You know, he's
as equal as everybody else. You know, nobody, if he's at Ohio State and that's a bar in Columbus, I don't know if that video gets out, you know. So he's not aware of the many eyes on him. And it's something that, unfortunately, a lot of players in sports learn a little too late.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Ryan Harris, our guest from in Denver now, but of course a long time here at Creighton, Durham Hall, Notre Dame, beyond. Who are your coaches at Notre Dame, Ryan?
I had Willingham and Weiss, so I had 2 years of each.
And I would imagine that Weiss was fairly organized?
Yeah, organized. Willingham, too. You know,
detail was everything?
Really, yeah, they, you know, practice schedule, game schedule. I mean, it was first time, too. Charlie Weiss would put the time of kickoff on the, you know, you put, usually coaches just put the game start, right? Hey,
yeah.
Start 7 p.m. But, you know, Charlie Weiss would be like, you know, game starts 7 p.m., kickoff 7:07. You'd be like, wow, okay, but you know what to expect, right?
Yep.
You know where you're at. You're not waiting for 7 minutes saying, when are we going to start this game?
But he seemed to me to be such a, so into detail. Was it different for him to get what he wanted from the professional level to the college level or not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you go to the pros, you got years of a player that you're watching film on. You watch the progression of Mike Maxx from freshman year to junior year or whatever it may be, and you feel like you know the guy. You get recruiting now, and, hey, a great quarterback in California might not be as good as the fifth best quarterback in Minnesota.
Yeah, and you got to make a decision right now, right?
You got to decide, and all your fans want a high-ranking class. They don't care what the team does. You know, you got to win the recruiting. You know, they got two top 10 classes. So those are the people who donate, and those are the people that matter. So it's a very different deal.
Interesting as always. Ryan Harris, thank you so much. I hope we can do it again soon. I knew you'd have some interesting insights, and you never let me down.
Thanks, brother. Great to talk to you, Mike.
You too. Ryan Harris, nice enough to join us. News Talk 830 WCCO.